17 minutes past 11, and today on Who, What, Where, When, Why, we're talking metadata. A Senate inquiry into proposed changes to the Telecommunications Act has questioned proposed changes to the laws around the collection of it. Our expert in all things internet, Still Garion, joins us on the line. Good morning, Still.
Good morning, Michelle.
So, layman's terms, explain to us what metadata is.
It's a term that's cropped up in amongst all of the legal and technical battle about online surveillance. And it essentially means information about data. Metadata, information about data. But it's data in itself. So let me give you a hard example from the days of telephone surveillance. Listening into someone's telephone conversation is one thing. That's actually, you know, doing telephone surveillance, a lawful intercept, as it's called in Australia, or a wiretap, as it's called in the United States. The metadata about that phone call would be everything else, like the numbers that were called, how long the call was for, who owns the telephone accounts in question, and in the case of mobile phones, the location of the phone when the call was being made. And the reason why this is an important thing at the moment is that it's core to the discussion of what new surveillance laws Australia will have, and in fact places around the world, because the idea is that the content of a communication, in this case the words spoken in the telephone conversation, deserves a certain level of privacy protection, and in the case of law enforcement, police need a warrant to get this kind of thing. They need a warrant to set up a telephone intercept. But metadata, it's argued, is a lesser kind of data that is less revealing of your private life and therefore doesn't need as much protection. And, you know, I'll lay my cards on the table and I'll say, I don't think that's right. I'm actually of the opinion that it's all personal data, because metadata can be just as revealing of private aspects of your life as the words spoken in a phone call, or in the case of the internet, which is what we're now talking about, the contents of your email, the contents of the web pages you view, as opposed to the metadata about them, which is, you know, who you sent the email to and how many bytes big it was and all of that.
So really what you're saying, though, there is that when you have the metadata from a conversation that you had on email, you can kind of extrapolate a little bit. If you put law enforcement agencies onto that data, they could probably surmise what you are up to from the metadata. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And look, there's plenty of examples of that. Let's say, and this becomes particularly important in the case of the internet and smartphones and tablets, because you're using those to communicate to servers all around the world, you know, to supply the services and the data for the apps you have on your smartphone, say, and that's kind of being recorded along with your location. And all of that can be happening constantly, or at least while you're using your apps, which is much more information than just at the moments you were making a telephone call or sending a text message. Now, let's give you a hard and fast example of that. If a young woman has physically visited a pharmacy and then 2 days later visits her general practitioner's office, and a week later is in the vicinity of an abortion clinic, and then in the subsequent 2 weeks is in a psychologist's office, what do you think's just happened in her life? You don't need to know the content of the any communication, just her visiting those locations. You know the narrative. You know what's gone down.
But that narrative that you just outlined there, that's not illegal. What she may or may not have done is not illegal.
Isn't it? Have a check around the law in different parts of Australia.
Well, this is sort of what I get to, because this could be about, there are other examples of somebody calls a suicide prevention line from the top of the Westgate Bridge, and, you know, therefore you could surmise that there's something going on with a mental health issue there.
That's right.
What's the problem with law enforcement agencies having that information?
Look, there are two things that need to be pointed out here, because an argument's often made that, hey, if you're investigating criminal behaviour, then if you haven't done anything wrong, you've got nothing to hide. Now, there's a wonderful line by Cardinal Richelieu some 100 years ago where he said, give me 6 lines penned by the most honest man in the land and I will find a way to hang him. And if you have more and more and more information about someone's life, you have more and more power relative to them. And it's very easy to take information out of context and build a narrative. And an example I use is, say you wish to discredit a political opponent, well, you notice that their shopping records show that at a pharmacy they had bought antidepressants or whatever it might be. They are now suffering from a mental illness in tabloid speak. And let's say that happens again a year later, they now have a history of mental illness, as a tabloid newspaper might put it. And again, there's nothing criminal going on here, but it really changes the relationship that you have. And although the vast majority of the men and women in our police forces probably do the right thing, we also do see a steady stream of issues coming up where police officers are found to be inappropriately using the information that they have access to. So in an imperfect world with imperfect people, we do need systems that will also work and help protect us from people who are trying to abuse the system. And at the moment, I think there's this discussion around data retention, as it's called. That's the other magic word you'll hear. The idea that telephone companies and internet service providers should keep hold of this metadata for perhaps 2 years, perhaps longer, essentially in case law enforcement or some other agency needs to go back through that and find some evidence. Now, when you start creating that vast repository of detailed personal information, you have a pool of data that not only allows people to misuse it and perhaps change the balance, you can misuse it, I think, in even more sinister ways to put pressure on people and so on. So all of those aspects of it are not coming up in the debate much at the moment, and I think that's a bit of a worry.
ISPs and the organisations that provide those, are they thinking about that though? Because surely we've talked about this before, that data retention is an incredibly expensive process, and the reason that it doesn't happen so readily now is because it is hard to store that vast amount of information. Who will end up paying for this if it comes to fruition?
Yeah, well, that's an important question, and obviously internet service providers don't wish to be burdened with an extra cost. If you're paying a $30 or $40 a month internet account, then already that's a low margin business, and they don't want to be burdened, with the cost. Well, they'll just pass it on to you and me, won't they? They won't lose their profits in all of this. But the other issue is too, when you do create such a big central database of stuff, that's a wonderful honeypot for not just law enforcement, but for criminals, for people who wish to do you and me harm. I mean, if I then wanted to find out about your life, well, I think, well, hey, I could just arrange for some hackers to get hold of that, or arrange for an employee of the internet service provider to look something up for me, or whatever. Now, that's not to say there can't be technical and legal safeguards against this kind of thing, but, that is, again, something that needs to be on the table in the discussion. I do know that the internet service providers broadly as an industry are not in favour of this. I mean, the only reason that the telephone companies have metadata for the police to access, that is everything on your phone bill, is that they were recording that on your phone bill. I mean, our phone bills are charged on the basis of, how many calls did you make and how long were they? And they need to keep that information long enough so that they can send the bill to someone, have the opportunity for the person to dispute the charge, and so on, and for it to make its way through the courts. So that's the only reason they kept the data to begin with.
Well, and I think that feeds in a little bit to some of the confusion around metadata, particularly with our politicians, that the phone companies need to to keep it for billing purposes. Mm. And now a lot of the politicians, and Tony Abbott, our esteemed leader, said this himself, that he believed metadata was all just about billing, you know, for billing purposes. There is a real disconnect.
It's simply not true. I'll just say that boldly, he is wrong. So he either doesn't know, he's either ignorant of the facts, or he is conscious of the facts and is lying. They're the only two choices.
And so, but do you think that we have a government then that, I would say he would have to be getting information from somewhere. Do you think we have a government at the moment that is implicitly anti-privacy in this area?
I'm tempted to say yes. Certainly, the Attorney General, George Brandis QC, has indicated that his time as Attorney General will be focusing on law and order issues and national security issues, I should just say, rather than law and order. And that generally is code word for increased surveillance, less privacy. The idea that metadata is not as privacy invading as the actual content of the communication is an idea that is kicked around by the law enforcement and intelligence communities. I just counter that with, again, well, that's not the case. I mean, if it didn't reveal the kind of connections they wanted to investigate, then they wouldn't be after that information to begin with.
Why would they need it? That's right. And you cite a really interesting study that happened at Stanford University that found that they could predict people's medical conditions, gun ownership, hobbies, relationships and religious views. Now, this always sort of seems like a bit of a conspiracy theory kind of land, but we know now that the NSA was monitoring alleged terrorists' internet browsing for looking for pornographic sites, which they were therefore then going to use as kind of a bargaining tool.
Yes, to embarrass them in front of their peers. Unless you cooperate with us and become an informant, we will show your pornographic browsing records to the imam at your mosque, and then you will be out of favour with your community. This is exactly the kind of pressure I'm talking about. That there's nothing illegal about these guys having viewed pornography. I mean, that's the one great thing about America. They do actually have a freedom of speech and freedom of communication, whereas we don't have that as strongly in our legislation. But at the same time, it's that pressure. You know, if someone was having an affair and did not want that revealed to their partner, well, or maybe they would reveal it, but under the circumstances and timing of their choosing, not because some official wishes to apply pressure. That's what I mean about it being a question of power relationships rather than this whole idea of, well, if you've done nothing wrong, you've got nothing to hide. I mean, if you've got nothing to hide, I note, for example, you're probably wearing clothes today when you went into the studio, and I'm wearing clothes as I go about my business.
Oh, no, we're very liberal here in Melbourne.
It's a Melbourne thing, I'm sure. this is what I mean. It is not this incredibly simplistic, we must fight the terrorists, therefore we need all of the weapons at our disposal to do that. If you actually look at the kind of things that end up being used, at the moment, for example, it's not just the police that can pull your telephone records without a warrant, I should say. It's any organisation which is the responsible for the collection or protection of government revenue, which means Centrelink can do it, the tax office, any sort of revenue generating organisation at every level of government. So we have reports on this each year, where at least once a year we know how many such requests are made of telephone companies. And the answer is about 500,000 requests a year. Now, some of them are perfectly reasonable. The police, for example, when they're investigating a murder, the federal police told me that, look, you know, someone's been killed. We may have to find out who they're talking to and whether the stories line up. So we might pull 400 or 500 people's telephone records and immediately, you know, rule out the vast majority of them and going, well, no, these people don't have anything to do with this person, and those records are then put away. In the case of the police at federal and state level, there's actually quite strong protections that such information can only be accessed by the officers doing that specific investigation. And if some other police officer decides to, you know, come in and start having a look around for whatever reason, and they're caught, there can be really quite substantial penalties. I wonder sometimes whether that strict enforcement of procedure is done in places like local councils that are checking for the dumping of asbestos and other waste, or the RSPCA looking for organised animal cruelty and so on. So again, there's this you'll hear it, you know, the language around it is always up with it. It's about terrorism and it's about fighting child abuse online. And the reality is it's actually about a lot more than just that.
So what happens from here? I mean, it's interesting, you gave that example just then of the police at the start. I would think that that's a good use of something like this to, you know, discount a whole lot of people in a murder case.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is why, you know, people who don a tinfoil hat and go, well, you know, all police are evil and all data collection is evil and all surveillance is evil. Well, it's actually what keeps it safe. Those of us old enough to have lived through the Cold War know that the constant monitoring of military and international communications was there to prevent there being some kind of sneak atomic attack that would fry us all in our beds one night. Okay, the threats have changed and times have changed, brackets, although there's still a few thousand nuclear warheads out there. But, you know, it's a matter of getting the balance right. So, you know, I'm certainly not saying the idea is a bad one. What I'm saying is that we need to be honest in our discussion and conversation about what this means, and make sure that the only voices in this are not solely those of the law enforcement and intelligence communities and the politicians who may or may not understand the subtleties of what they're saying, and that we have a wider community debate about what it is that we want these people to do in our lives and what risks we're willing to accept.
Do you think we're seeing that, post massive allegations, or not even allegations, massive truths, that the NSA have been doing, you know, mass surveillance? Do you think that trickle down is happening here in Australia so that we are more conscious of this sort of stuff going on in our lives?
Certainly, I've found that, yes, people know about it. I mean, the taxi driver test is a famous one. If the taxi driver has heard about the issue and is discussing it, then it's on the national agenda. You know, everyone has heard at least some stories about this. Whether they've gone, oh, yeah, that's the NSA, that's what they do, that's fine. If people are happy with that, cool. Let them be happy with that. There's certainly a lot of surveys that are showing that people have become more concerned about how their personal information is misused by private industry as much as the intelligence communities or whatever. And indeed, there's some figures kicking around this week because it's actually Privacy Awareness Week here in Australia at the moment. And the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner has got some figures up on this that say, yes, 70%+ of Australians have become more concerned about privacy issues online in the last few years. So, it's getting there. I suspect that more people are worried about what private industry is doing than our patriotic national security organisations. But we do, as I say, need to make sure that all of the angles are explored in this debate, and it isn't a kind of, well, if you don't support everything being monitored, then you must be on the side of the terrorists.
Mm. Still, it's always an absolute pleasure talking to you about all things the internet, and we look forward to doing it again on this show. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
No worries, Michelle. My pleasure. Anytime.